Hi, Good Morning Night Vale listeners, fan zoners, and future patrons.
Yes, we said it, patrons. We are launching a Patreon.
So we can do cool things like bring you more fun/weird content and have some cash to pay our editors and mixers.
If you were thinking I'd love to buy those Good Morning Night Vale hosts a beer or a froyo or 2 semesters of tuition at mortuary school.
Now you can, but instead of beers and yogurt and embalming fluid, it's cash, so we can use it to keep bringing you this show.
We have great perks for our patrons, like ad-free episodes and exclusive backstage tour videos and pictures, including video from our recent trip to White Castle.
It was fine.
Totally fine.
Plus, a bonus monthly Fan Zone only episode, bi-monthly live Fan Zones, shoutouts in the credits, recipes, and food recs from the cast.
I, Hal Lublin, will make scones for you on the internet.
Plus monthly weird personalized gifts and snacks delivered by mail from the cast. I have a lot of weird Night Vale shit in my house, and for the right price, it's coming your way.
And the opportunity to be a guest on Good Morning Night Vale on the future episode of your choice.
And more.
If you love us or even just like us, check out our Patreon and keep our love alive with your sweet, sweet cash.
Go to patreon.com/goodmorningnightvale. That's patreon.com, Good Morning Night Vale.
We are forever in your hearts.
And in your earbuds.
And in your bank accounts.
It's fine.
We love you. At a loss for words.
Here's a few you can use.
Good morning, Night Vale.
Please use those words. Please use the words Good Morning Night Vale wherever you need to say good morning. My name is Meg Bashwiner, and I am one of your hosts today.
And I'm Symphony Sanders, and I'm mostly your host.
And I'm Hal Lublin, and there hasn't been a host here for 30 years.
Spoopy.
And this is Good Morning Night Vale, the Night Vale recap show hosted by cast members from Welcome to Night Vale. And then sometimes we talk about your theories for Welcome to Night Vale, and today we're going to do just that with this episode, which is...
Walk. Walk signals are malfunctioning all over town, plus updates from former intern Dana and a look at the community calendar. Let's talk about it.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about this episode, guys. It's back to being like... creepy, disjointed, you're not quite sure what's happening, you're on the edge of your seat a bit, don't you think?
Yeah. Stylistic for me, one of the things that I started to notice about these past couple episodes, and specifically like this episode, is that we are now hearing from guest stars more frequently and more at length.
Yeah.
So Night Vale has gotten to the point in its trajectory where Joseph and Jeffrey are feeling comfortable writing monologues for other voices at length and also comfortable in asking actors to perform on the show and working that into the big picture of Night Vale storytelling is these larger guest parts. So for this one, Jessica takes over like a good chunk of the episode. She talks more than Cecil does in this episode,
yeah.
I think. And that's pretty huge.
I'm curious because you used the specific phrase, which is they felt comfortable asking actors to come and be record for the podcast. Was that something to your knowledge? Because you're in the trenches of this. Is that something that was either a difficult ask or was it the discomfort? If there was discomfort, was it more like I don't want to ask? Because how are we going to get them to record and bring them in? Or was it more I'm not sure how we're going to logistically handle it, or did it, do you think it's married to, we're comfortable writing for other people, so we're just going to have them come and record, that's not an issue?
I think it's all of those things. I think it's definitely like they're at the point where they have, as writers, they have voice strong enough and like a foothold strong enough in to bring in more character, more developed characters in. So there's that there. But also this, at this point, Night Vale was popular. It was, had become something that the two of the three of them made really kind of out of nothing, on a very small footprint into something that could have a footprint that expanded. So we felt comfortable asking more people to be involved because we wanted to bring people into this thing that was now popular. Our friends who had been, you know, who are actors, we wanted to offer them the exposure that being on a popular show can bring. And also, like, we were at a point where, like, it felt like it was a good ask of someone. It was like, I'm not asking you to come do my weird podcast that no one listens to for nothing.
Right.
You know, it was like, please come on the show and we can pay you and there will be, you know, you'll be able to get to perform in this new medium that is kind of emerging into something that has become widely popular.
Right. And specifically audio fiction, because that wasn't really, at large, a very popular part of this medium. I feel like a lot of podcasts before this were more informational. No,
yeah, audio drama, audio fiction had been out there. You know, Hal, you were on Thrilling. Like, it was,
yes,
it was something that existed, and existed with a good bit of a following too. But I don't think that there was a audio fiction out there that had this much expanse at that point, that this was kind of, it was kind of new ground in terms of podcast popularity, and in terms of serialized audio fiction popularity.
Yeah. I mean, like Thrilling Adventure Hour, we were doing well in 2014, but this was a completely different level. And you know, we've talked about it before here. Nobody expected it. So, but one thing to Night Vale's credit, and I guess something I never really expected is getting paid for everything, because I'm always so happy.
Yeah.
I'm generally the guy, like, if I really like a project, I'm happy to be there and be a part of it. And it's not like I don't have a business mind to it, but, you know, recording stuff, when Joseph and Jeffrey sent me, like, the September monologues, and we'll talk more about that when we get to that episode, but I was surprised, even though I'm sure they had mentioned it, when I got paid afterwards. So I was like, this is like, it's my pleasure to do it, and I'm happy, and I'd already been paid to be out on the road, so it just felt like, well, sure, I'll do this. But that's a good professional standard to maintain. It's something Night Vale has done very well pretty much from the jump, since people started being involved. Now,
Yeah, since we started turning any bit of profit. I mean, Cecil, they had, I'm not going to like get into the granular aspects of this,
of course,
but it was always like kind of based on whatever we have, we will share it. Like, whatever comes in, we can figure out a way to do that. Also, like, something that's just in the ethos that Joseph and Jeffrey and Cecil and I share is that people should be paid to work. Especially when money's being made. Like, I mean, when money's not being made, they should still get something. Artists should be paid. It's work. It's not something that is, you know, I can go make shitty pottery I'll pay to go make shitty pottery, but I'm not going to do the thing that I have worked hard becoming a professional at for free so that someone else can make money off of my work. and that's, I think, that's my personal position, but also it is the position of the ethos of our company. Is just, we pay people to work, whatever we can. And luckily, I mean, especially during this time when things were starting to blow up, we actually were able to pay people, like, you know, close to what they were worth.
Right. Well, you know, you mentioned the expansion of the use of characters, and definitely the Strex storyline helped facilitate that. And this does feel way more, like you said, like a Dana episode than it does a Cecil. Everything happening in Night Vale is background. So the huge, spectacular, weird thing, you know, we talk about these walk signals, right, and then we're not even there, or we don't even get an actual description of how it's solved
until late, way late.
But even with that, it's just like, you wouldn't believe what happened.
Right.
This solution was such a solution, but it was finally solved.
That's true.
So a normal episode has happened, and this, all the Dana stuff becomes like a Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are Dead, where we're learning the rules and coming back to the old oak door, what will be the old oak door. It's just interesting to see how they're sort of breaking the rules by just shifting perspective from what would be otherwise a quote unquote standard episode, if there's such a thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because normally you would have like the little segments with like traffic and the community calendar and all those things. And yes, those things do happen, but it can be interrupted almost at any moment by Dana. I kept in my brain calling it phasing into this reality because, you know, he can't see her or hear her, but she's trying to communicate and like telling her side of the story. Cause really we had like a very vague idea of what was going on, in this other world. And we're just getting a much clearer picture of, the light on the lighthouse, the blinking red light on the top of the mountain, and the masked figures, the giant masked figures. And, you know, when she goes down into that, like, I keep thinking of it as a maze, sort of like circular. I'm swirling my hand around.
Yeah, like a cyclical.
Yeah, like you're mixing. Yeah.
No, yeah. I'm mixing it up.
Like you work at Hot Dog on a Stick.
I do. I want a corn dog real bad. Damn it. So yeah, when she's in that little spiral area, and that was like crazy. So she's got like she's experiencing all these things, and in this timeless sort of world, she doesn't even know how long she's been there. So it's pretty fascinating because we haven't really gotten a peek into that too much.
Yeah. And she seems to be maintaining her chill too.
Oh, like, totally.
All of these, like these things are big scaries. Like things like where you walk for what seems like days and days and then you find yourself back at the exact same spot. Like that's the stuff of like my deep chilling fears. Also she comes upon the like abandoned settlement, abandoned places or just like places where people used to live and then they left for some reason.
Cause there's an energy.
Yeah. There's an energy. And also just like, it's weird to see human things in human use without humans there. It's like, yeah, it's like watching a dog walk on its hind legs wearing clothes, but scary. Not cute in any way.
I know, awesome. That'd be cool.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be cool. And then getting lost in the spiral, the loss of control. So like, these are like big scaries, but she like stays with us. She's like, you can feel her. You feel that she's afraid, but she's just like continues to just share because she knows that she hopes that she's breaking through and that Cecil can hear her. So she just like maintains her composure to keep driving through. Listening to this episode, this like long Dana episode, I felt a little bit like I was listening to Alice Isn't Dead just because I know it's like, it felt like a different character. It definitely feels like a different character, but also it's just like, Jessica's like just the way she delivers certain things. I'm like, ah, it's terrific. She's so good. She's chillingly good.
Yeah, she's wonderful. I was really struck by the how often she mentioned how much she missed her brother and her mother. And I feel like I don't remember us having that much information about her home life before this.
Yeah.
You know, but maybe there was, but like it was very distinct to me. Maybe it just jumped out to me. Because I'm also very close to my mother and my brother. And to be away, thinking about being in a place where you couldn't communicate with them and how that would feel and the fear that she must be feeling and the sadness, loneliness, anxiety. But she is, like you said, keeping it real cool.
Yeah. The thing that kind of got me was her missing the smell. Of Night Vale. First of all, the way that she, I picture rabbit ears on a TV, which I'm sure was somewhere in their mind writing this. And for those of you who are younger, you used to have to adjust antennae on the top of your television to get it stationed properly because everything was broadcast over the air. So that idea of like, just turn, don't move, turn it just a little bit. And then somebody would have to like stand there. You have to like perfectly get it in place. So that idea that cocking your head at the right angle phases you into another reality is very funny. But that idea of smell, like there are smells that or these things that are triggers. Mm-hmm. Like smells for me when I hear the Mr. Rogers theme song, I get hungry because
it was dinner time.
It was dinner time. It was on at 5. That meant dinner was on. The dinner was going to happen after Mr. Rogers.
Oh.
So I just am conditioned by those things. And there are smells that, you know, I know what my house smells like. Mm-hmm. with the house back home. I know what the Jersey Shore smells like, as pleasant or unpleasant as that can be, like different areas of it. And those are really strong memories that make me feel at home. It's a really – smell is a really strong sense that you don't even think about that much.
But it does, but it does really affect you. Like anytime I smell lilacs, I think of home because we had a lilac bush outside our house. And so when the window doors or windows were open, it would just like – the smell would waft through the house. And I remember waking up to that smell every day, especially during the summer.
Yeah. That like little bit of like when it just starts to get a little bit cold in like the beginning of fall and we can start smelling like campfire and chimneys and like wood burning stoves. It's like just like in the cold, it's like cold, your nose like getting cold air full of like that faint smoky smell. Oh, I love that. Also the smell of a Hampton Inn.
Oh, yeah. Slightly syrupy.
Slightly syrupy. There's like that they use the same, must use the same air freshener, floor cleaner, whatever it is. But like it is distinct. That like sometimes I'll catch it in the wind and I'll be like, home. like not quite home, but not quite not home.
Smell. I can't wait.
I love the way theaters smell too. That's definitely like a, it's like the paint and the dust and the lights.
Yeah.
It has so like musty. Certain alchemy. Yeah. That is like specifically theater from the stage too. Like you, I mean, depends on what room you walk into. If you walk into a musty old black box theater, it's going to smell, but from the audience, it doesn't smell the same way as it smells from backstage.
There's always a smell in a theater in the wings and sometimes even on stage, like it was painted a week ago.
Yeah. Because oftentimes it is. It's like you're constantly, it's black. So you're it's
and replaying
hard
the
to
floor.
Get that consistent. Yeah. When I was in a young theater student, we would have to go in at like midnight after rehearsal and paint the floors.
Yep. Yeah, we did that. Our main stage, we painted to look like a composition book for the 1991 musical Homeroom.
Wow.
Which I do have a digital copy of if you're interested.
Yes.
HMU. but I remember getting to paint it afterwards. And I mean, that theater opened in 1990, I think was the first musical, first show on that stage. And by time I graduated, you could like take a putty knife and pull up like an inch thick layer of all the time. You know, you're not scraping the paint off. You're just painting over it.
Yeah. So you're just walking on paint. Sanding between coats. It really is just Yeah, it is. Right when I first started in New York, my first couple of years there, I worked on this show called The Soup Show. And for the set for that, it was a black box that we painted completely white. And then we had to restore it to black.
Oh my gosh.
Oh boy.
Nothing is more insidious on black paint than white paint. It gets into all of the cracks. And so we were there with like all night, just like filling in tiny little bits in the walls, like just like the parts of the concrete and the brick. Like we had to use like thin brushes. Cause like, you know, if you don't return the theater as you rented it, they're going to charge you like a fart ton of money that you don't have.
Yeah.
So
a fart ton is just over a gajillion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Theater paint, paint. But yeah, smell is like hugely important. And then the way that the Dana bits in this episode are written, it's pretty heavy in the prose department.
I know. I was going to say it's like very poetic and evocative. Like it was really conjuring up very strong visuals for me. And I had to, there was a couple of times I had to go back because I wasn't reading along and I realized that it's easier for me to comprehend everything, especially when it's this complicated language, if I read along as well. Because if I don't, then I feel like I have to go back and hear sentences again to understand what those things could mean. So I don't know. I just found myself like being drifted away on like the lulling sound of her voice at times.
Yeah, it is such an evocative language that things like this do come up, like in it, where because the images are painted that make you think about something from your own life or make you think about, you know, something else. Like it brings your brain to a different place. It encourages thought in such a way that you get it. The words make you get lost in your own thoughts. So you have to go back and be like, wait, where I missed some plot stuff because I was thinking about like what my, you know, grandma's kitchen table was like, or,
right.
You know, like there's things that kind of pull you into your own head about it. And because it's a podcast, usually you're listening to it alone. So you're by yourself and you're alone with your own thoughts with this evocative text. So yeah, that I can definitely understand that. It happens to me with Night Vale a good bit is that, the writing is so, so beautiful and so specific sometimes that it makes me pull away to think about something, to solve a problem or think about a memory or just think about some weird shit and be lost in space and come back and be like, okay, all of a sudden we have, you know, all of a sudden we have learned so much about this lighthouse and there's a door that she can't get through. And what does this door mean? And how is this, you know, how's this door going to come to play in the future? What could it mean? How can we get her back? What does back mean?
And there's so many,
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, there's so many things that were also like repeated throughout that. I was like, okay, that's pointed. Like, I need to remember that. And she kept saying, the great glowing coils of the universe, the great glowing coils of the universe. And then I was like, oh, that's this book.
The line was so good. They named the whole book after it.
Yeah.
That's a good line.
The line got took and put in a book. There's something hypnotic to their writing style. It's sort of like one of the signatures, which is I'm going to make a statement, then I'm going to dig deeper and deeper and deeper. Mm. Until it's what consumes your mind and then leads you somewhere else. That idea of like, you know, I don't know what time it is. Nobody knows what time it is. Time is a construct. Time is that. Could be this, could be that. Like deconstructing a simple concept, taking a piece of information that should be simple enough, you can just move on, but rather deconstructing and digging and digging and digging into it. And it does lull you. You get lulled by it. I don't think it makes it easy to miss anything that goes on because it's pretty major, but it does distract you. And it's something that almost that every character, I know I've had dialogue like that. You've had dialogue like that. Cecil, you, Meg, like everybody, we all have it. So it's just certainly a hallmark of Jeffrey and Joseph, but also could be just the way things are in Night Vale, that it's a place where everything gets deconstructed and torn down. And not analyzed, but dug into, which is odd in a city where information is controlled and forbidden and you're not supposed to have knowledge. So it's like there's a hunger to, I'm just going to deconstruct anything. If you say you're going to the store, that will become a 5-minute journey into what it means to be alive and whether any of us are alive and what it means to make use of it while we are.
Yeah. I mean, the thing we say about Night Vale a lot is that the mundane is extraordinary and the extraordinary is mundane. So a lot of that exploring certain things that you may have thought were mundane are really deep diving into them and pulling them apart to see that what we thought was mundane is of course extraordinary to people of Night Vale, but this is why it is extraordinary. Because when you look at all of the different pieces of it and look at it from different angles, you're gonna see more to it than you thought from the surface or never had thought about it that way before.
Yeah, the whole concept of perspective in this episode was obviously one of the more striking themes. And again, like we were talking about, it made me drift away again because I was like, huh, maybe if I looked at other things differently, I might see. And then I was like, God damn it, a minute's gone by.
Now I got to go back in and find out like why we're on Thursday of the community calendar for some reason. Like.
Yeah.
Because they said Thursday so many times. Thursday that could be if only we lived Thursday to the full potential of its Thursdayness, not expecting it to be anything but Thursday, embracing every inch of its Thursday reality and living each Thursday moment anew, only to wake the next Thursday and again impose unsuccessfully our imagined Thursday onto the unyielding frame of Thursday, our Thursday, a lost cause.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about Thursday? I think it's a throwaway day.
Oh, I love Thursday.
Do you?
I do.
I feel like it's just like I'm always like pining for Friday.
Yeah, but like you're so close. Like, you're like, it's, I do, if I can just get through this, Friday is like, it's in the bag. Like, I can just.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then like Thursday was always the, like, you know, the day in college where you definitely should not have gone out and gone crazy. For some reason, like, Thursday is the start of the college weekend. It's something I never really understood.
It's the start of a lot of weekends, because I, around my neighborhood, people get crunk on Thursday.
Because they're like, I just have to make it through one day of work and then it's fine. But yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Thursdays, from a work week perspective, I really like, because you're heading downhill.
Yeah.
So that's the day where, you know, Friday's coming, the weekend's coming, you're past the long part of the week. Mm-hmm. So you're really like, for me, that's when I'm getting down to business and I'm getting a lot done. I know what my Thursday's going to look like, as opposed to other days, which may feel a little bit more in flux. So I like, for me personally, I like at the end of the day to be able to look back and go, that was productive because I set X goal and I achieved it. And it's easier for me on a Thursday because I know where I'm supposed to be. I know no matter what, only one more day of the week left, and it's a lighter day for me in terms of workload responsibility, so I can get a lot more done even on Friday. So,
well,
yeah, and this show comes out on a Thursday. Thursday's a pretty good podcast day.
Yeah,
that's true. Our show comes out. That's the best part of the day.
Yeah,
but I'm just saying, because I think it's just because I have an untraditional job. Thursday is just like another day I work like 2 hours a day.
Right.
Yeah. You know. The life of a freelancer is weird. Try to like give myself a work week because I'm like, just do it. Just go. But then of course right now it's 10:30 at night on Monday and I am at work. So it's like Saturday at 7 p.m. I was telling a story to a bar full of people, and that was work. And but also I need to, you know, I had a conference call today at 3 o'clock like a normal person. So it's like,
right.
It's the days of the week become somewhat meaningless, especially when we're on tour. Days of the week are meaningless. Like today is the name of the city we're in. Today is Chattanooga. That's what right. day. It's not Monday. It's not Tuesday. It's Chattanooga.
And I always like when it's Tour Friday.
Tour Friday is the only day on tour that matters.
Yeah. We're like, ooh, we're just this last show.
Oh, we love Tour Friday so much.
It's the best.
My favorite, yeah, because it's Tour Friday, for those of you who are do not live your life in a van, is the work day before you have the next day off. It's pretty, yeah. And so that's usually the only night I allow myself to go out or like have a drink, unless it's been a particularly rough day, because it's like you can't, you know, every day can't be Tour Friday. But when Tour Friday comes along, especially after like 7 days of straight
work, yeah.
Oh, man.
It's special.
It was Tour Friday and we were driving. Was it when we were driving to Anaheim, maybe?
Yeah.
And
we all
like were listening to tunes and we listened to Steve Miller Band Swingtown. And that is the most Friday song you can possibly listen to.
That is true. That is true. That was a good one. Cause that whole time, we play a game that actually Hal started.
Me?
You did, Babykins. Hal started this game where it's basically like someone starts off the playlist with any song they want. And then from that song, the next person in the car has to choose a song that makes them think of that song or that puts them in the same mood as that song or just whatever.
Yeah, like a related song.
Yeah. And you just do a little round robin of that. And so we keep adding things to the our playlists. I use Spotify, but, you know. Be a sponsor, jerks, or whatever. give me a free membership.
That'll do it.
That'll do it.
Hey, jerks. give me free Spotify, you jerk offs.
Although my Spotify is connected to my Hulu. Did you know you could do that?
Shit.
I did know.
I did not know that. I had no idea.
What?
I'm now saving myself like a lot of money.
We live in a connected world.
Dude, it's great. It's great.
Speaking of music, should we...
Yeah.
Should we move into it? The part
Let's
we talked about.
Get into it.
Yes.
All right.
Please.
Up next, we hear from fans and friends of the podcast about their theories, comments, and questions. But first, a conversation about this episode's weather, which is What Have They Done to You Now? By Daniel Knox.
I know him.
I know. I think Cecil knows him too. He's a Chicago guy, right?
Yeah. He used to live with one of our assistant tour managers.
Oh, he lived with Angelique.
Yeah.
Oh.
Shout out a grand one.
Shout out to Angelique, the babiest babe of all babes.
Whose birthday is tomorrow as of this recording. Right.
Oh my gosh.
It's going to be a good one.
I was doing my Googling about him. I found that he learned to got his sound and really learned to play piano by playing pianos in downtown Chicago hotels late at night. Like he would just walk into the lobby of a downtown Chicago hotel at midnight and just sit down at the piano, and usually people didn't give him shit.
That's something that Dispersion does.
Yes, Dispersion will play any piano.
Any piano. If he sees a piano, he's going to play it.
And that's a good thing about him.
It is a good thing.
But yeah, I enjoyed the song. I liked it felt pretty bare, but also pretty showy. I thought that was cool. I thought that, I really liked the piano sound. It felt very like Judy Garland and kind of cabaret.
Yeah.
Always a little sad.
Yeah, it did.
I feel like his music is not sad, but like melancholy. There's like a little tinge of melancholy.
Yeah, it's like I like it as a piece of music. It didn't connect for me the way some do. Mm-hmm. This just felt like, oh, I'm listening to a nice piece of music. This is my little break, and then the episode will continue. But still,
I was imagining Cecil really walking around. Remember, we were that one fan zone. The person was like, oh, I always imagine it like the music is playing while something else is going on. And I was like, oh, that's funny. So I've kind of started doing this. Oh, crud. People are starting to shoot off fireworks already.
It is July 1, people. Have some respect for your dogs and your sufferers of PTSD.
I know. But I'm just saying, pew, pew. But yeah, I was imagining Cecil just like walking around to this song, like strutting around.
Yeah, uncontrollably.
Mm-hmm. It was partially also because I was walking at the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I can't help it. If I'm listening to music and I'm walking, I end up walking in cadence with whatever it was. So I was just like this saunter. It was nice.
That sounds nice. The thing for me with this episode was that because we were flipping back and forth between Cecil and Dana, it felt like we had just flipped somewhere else for a minute. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we flipped to this melancholy man with a piano. I think even though we do know him, I think he did come to us via submission, I think.
Oh, really?
I think he came through the channels. At least when I asked Joseph about it, that's what he said. So.
Oh.
But, you know.
But, you know, the world of music is quite varied. And I find that sometimes you don't know that you know someone, right? Yeah. And if that's the best way you can get involved with something, go about it.
Yeah.
Yes.
And also, Daniel Knox opens for Rasputina quite a bit.
Yes.
And so does our other friend and weather of the show, Eliza Rickman. Woo-hoo. Is also a frequent opener for Rasputina. So...
Lazarix.
Just close those circles.
That's right.
For That's Rasputina, right. Who has never been the weather, but we can, maybe we'll reach out.
We could make a full Venn diagram of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're making the request. We're going to make it happen. We at Good Morning Night Vale will get new weathers.
Yeah. We have power.
This is our power. No. Yes. I mean, hey,
we have powers because we're witches.
Tide of change is, I don't know. Something about progress. Correct. Anyway, speaking of progress, let's progress forward, but not with Progresso sauce, with nice Sunday gravy.
Yes.
And we're going to warm up that Sunday gravy in a nice small saucepan on your stove.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. And we're going to, you know, dunk our calzone in it. So let's hop in. Let's hop into that fan zone full on, both feet into the marinade.
Here I go. I'm holding my nose so I don't drown.
And all that cheese and sauce.
Yeah. All the cheeses and sauces are going to go on my nose and drown me. I can't have that.
Stay right there. Good Morning Night Vale will return after a brief break.
Riley writes... Hello, Meg, Symphony, and Hal. Well, on behalf of everybody, hello.
Hi.
I candled it, Symphony. I said it was bad for everybody. I'll try it for 1 second. I'll try it.
I'm not trying to steal your thunder, Hal. Sorry.
Act as an envoy. My thunder's gone. I disappeared. You're wearing a burglar mask like a raccoon and riding. My favorite creepy Night Vale things are always the ones that could be chalked up to the citizens of Night Vale just being weird about. I said Night Vale a number of times. I'm going to back up. Don't edit this. My favorite creepy Night Vale things are always the ones that could be chalked up to the citizens of Night Vale just being weird about stuff. In Walk, for example, my headcanon is that there was nothing supernatural about the walk signs at all. I like to think that the people of Night Vale are just too well conditioned to unquestioningly
That's
obeying.
Right.
Hold on. Oh, don't you dare. I swear if you edit this out, just give me a human moment for once in my goddamn life.
Just take a breath. It's okay.
In Walk, for example, my headcanon is that there was... Meg, I was doing it, and then you stole my moment. You and Symphony are Thelma Louising this part of the fan zone. And I would just like to get through this. I'm going to try now. In Walk, for example, my headcanon is that there was nothing supernatural about the walk signs at all. I like to think that the people of Night Vale are just too well conditioned to unquestioningly obey any glowing sign they happen to see. The walk signs were newly upgraded to meet federal standards, and the city council failed to take into account how well people would react. At the end of the episode, the reason everyone was able to break free was just because the walk signs changed to don't walk. Cecil's apparent mind control in the studio was him living for the drama. Thanks. Riley, that's a good one. Because everybody is bad at their job in Night Vale, is my canon. And that would include people being bad at the jobs of just being people in a town walking around. Although the sign does appear in the studio. Or is he seeing it through a window? That's the question.
Yeah, that's the question. No, I think it appears in this studio because he wouldn't. Because he was like, oh, that's why I'm glad I can't see it. And then he stopped. So he said it was in the studio. But he also is full of drama, so who knows?
That's right. Sorry to burst your balloon. I will not save the drama for anyone's mama.
Yes.
Well, Hannah writes, hey there. Hey, Hannah. Or Hannah. Wait, what do you guys think? Hannah? Hannah?
I'm going to go with Hannah.
Hannah.
Yeah, it's a Hannah.
Okay. So, like a lot of people, I'm going to start out by saying how much Welcome to Night Vale means to me and has done since I started listening in 2013. The episodes you are currently talking about are the ones that I see as my episodes, i.e., the first ones that I had to wait for. And so I have a lot of vivid memories of listening to them. You spoke a few episodes ago about how people listen to Night Vale. And when I was in sixth form, is that like sixth grade?
Probably some sort of foreign educational system.
Ooh, fancy. Oh, wait. So,
Hogwarts.
Hold on. Oh, yes. Okay. And when I was in sixth form, I used to play it aloud in the dark room while developing pictures. It's an experience I would recommend. Nothing but the dark and the smell of chemicals. Oh. One of my favorite monologues comes from the episode Walk, in which Dana talks about her grandfather's table. It's been 5 years, and whenever I hear it, it hits me. The idea of family and memories and togetherness. That table is all of our lives added together. And something I've always identified with, and something that has influenced me as an artist, even if I haven't done anything with that influence yet, it's still manifesting. At the end of this, she says, life solves all of our problems against our will. And this hits me more than it did at 16. Hannah. Thank you, Hannah. That's very nice. And I agree. I think a lot of these episodes can, like we were talking about, can evoke a lot of strong memories and stay with us for a really long time. And when those things are brought up, it just revives them anew. So we're right there with you, Hannah.
Yeah. And The interesting thing for me that Hannah brings up is about the table itself. And mm-hmm. I think it's so interesting how we can attach our memories to, like we were talking about earlier, like smells, but pieces of furniture or rooms or places like that. Like, I remember being just like nostalgic for my parents' garage that we used to just sit in a circle of chairs and smoke weed in. Like the garage felt like a special place.
Oh yeah.
And like the artifacts in it felt special to us. And you know, it's a garage and they're, you know, beach chairs in a circle that a bunch of, you know, 19-year-olds are sitting around smoking weed.
Yeah, but times have been had.
Yeah, it feels special there. And it feels like it's attached to those objects and that places. That table is all of our lives added together. You know, it's like we all come to this thing and we all have this shared touchstone of memory.
Totally.
And I think there's lots of things in life that are special and unique to that. We talk about the big tour we did in 2015, the Hilda Medusa, our vans. And like, you know, we became attached to those places. Yeah, it's interesting how we can furnishings and automobiles can take on a life of their own. And it's
definitely.
Like, yeah, I miss that garage, maybe not more than I miss those people, but I miss that time, you know.
Right.
It's like one step below anthropomorphizing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like when you have an experience that is so special and feels so great. And it's also just like, not even that. Like, it doesn't have to be something that is like a unique, like a day like no other. It's just mm-hmm. like, we all used to come together and have good days and bad days here. And, you know, share lots of laughs here, but also just like, you know, normal things of life happened there.
Right. They're just regular days. Yeah.
But it was something we all shared. Cool. Let's hear from Kelly. Kelly writes, "Good morning, Hal, Symphony, and Meg. I wanted to share some thoughts on my favorite episodes and to thank you for drowning out the voices of the call center I work next to. They are very loud and nowhere near as pleasant as you three." Aw, thanks. "Back when Walk first debuted, this episode made an impression on me, but I couldn't put my finger on why. It wasn't until re-listens years later, after I had lost my own grandfather and grandmother, that I understood why. In Dana's final monologue, when she described missing the table as much as her grandfather, I recognized my own longing for my grandparents' creaky house in East Texas, the fried chicken my grandmother made, and my grandfather's beautiful creations as a jeweler. They were amazing people, as I imagined Dana's grandfather was. And like Dana, who is in a bad place literally and figuratively, sometimes all you can do is walk to keep moving forward against the darkness in our lives. Hmm. The walk signs are a reminder that life moves on and we can too. Dana is a character I've come to identify with a lot and I will always be rooting for. As for numbers," we're getting into numbers, which is the next episode, so spoilers, guys. "As for numbers, I always wondered if it was intentional that it was episode 42. The answer to life, the universe, and everything.
Yeah.
As a Douglas Adams fan, it makes me giggle. And Molly Quinn as Faye is fantastic. And weirdly, another character I've grown to identify with. Since the episode came out, I've graduated college and ended up working in corporate America as a data analyst and work all day with, you guessed it, numbers. I too feel trapped sometimes and stuck behind a desk looking at numbers while the world is burning to the ground outside. I'm not sure if Faye is aware of the Strex Corp takeover in Night Vale, but I'm certain she too would be appalled. While I used to think Cecil's closing statement, 'Know your limitations,' was horribly depressing, I now know that's the truth of the world we live in. I can't fix everything, but as long as I work to be mindful and change what I can, get out and vote, I have to accept I'm doing the best I can given mm-hmm. my situation. I hope this email isn't too depressing. I swear I'm good," in parentheses. "And everyone in the Night Vale family knows the joy they bring me and the world, but mostly me. It's my email. Much love, Kelly."
Oh, thanks, awesome. Kelly. And yes, doing every little bit you can does help. If not all the time, the world as a whole, those little micro movements, those little steps, every little bit counts. And I'm sure there are people out there that appreciate it. I sure do.
Yeah. And thank you for highlighting the correlation between the walk and the walk signs and what Dana is doing on her journey.
Mm-hmm.
There is this walk, don't walk. And the walk signs are coming in and like they're playing with this in Cecil's world, where Dana is on a journey in her world and just trying to walk herself home, walk herself back to her mother and her brother. and the things that she's longing for in her family. Also, your grandparents' house in East Texas sounds awesome. And thank you for bringing up fried chicken that your grandmother made. That sounds lovely. I like fried chicken, too.
Me too.
Me too.
And we have numbers coming up. So, yeah, thank you for your input about numbers and how that relates to your life and the sentiments you've expressed. I thank you for sharing that. And we have numbers to look forward to. We will have the next episode will be numbers, and we can't wait to talk about it with you. Thank you so much for listening to us this week. And we will be back with more of our bullshit in just 14 days. And as always, good morning, Night Vale. Good morning.
Back on our bullshit.
Good Morning Night Vale is a Night Vale Presents production. It is hosted by Symphony Sanders, Hal Lublin, and Meg Bashwinner. It is edited by Grant Stewart. It is mixed by Vincent Cascione. It is produced by Meg Bashwinner. Theme music by Disparition. Special thanks to our fans who submitted their thoughts this week. Leave us a voicemail at 929-277-2050 or email us at info@goodmorningnightvale.com to share your theories and ask questions, or to tell us which host would make the best stepdad. This show is funded entirely by our patrons, like Farrah Martin, Aiden Igme, Ginny Ash, Kim Runtool, and Samantha Ish. If you enjoyed the show and have the means, please contribute, and or please overthrow our capitalist system, which assigns monetary value to everything, even jokes about eating baked goods while showering. Patreon.com/goodmorningnightvale. For more information on this show, go to goodmorningnightvale.com and follow us on Facebook and on Twitter at Nightvale Chat. Special thanks to Christy Gressman, Jeffrey Craner, Joseph Fink, and Adam Cecil. Today's adverb is usually. Usually, I write a new joke for this part, but instead, I just chose to use the first adverb that appears in the episode walk, which is usually in sentence 4.
I want you to write a story about a wedding reception. I want you to make that story 2 minutes. That's about 200 to 250 words when you read it out loud. Finish it, refine it a bit, work on it, get it to somewhere that you are happy with it. I want you to delete it.
That's me, Joseph Fink, giving a short writing assignment on me and my Welcome to Night Vale co-writer, Jeffrey Craner's new podcast, Start With This. If that prompt sparked your creativity, then give it a listen, because on this show, it's you who will do the creating. Not sure where to start? Start with this. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.